Hit him with a little ghetto gospel.
Those who wish to follow me,
my ghetto gospel,
I welcome with my hand.
I'm talking to Christina Quinlan. Christina, you recently wrote a book entitled... Actually, can you tell me the name of the book you recently wrote and roughly what the book was about?
Hi, Ger. My book is entitled Inside: Women in Prison in Ireland, Past and Present. And I suppose the book is of my PhD study. My PhD research was a study of women in prison in Ireland over the last 200 years. And when I completed the PhD, Irish Academic Press agreed to publish it. And that now is the book that you're talking about.
I am under the impression that we hardly need to write a book about women in prison because there are so few women in prison. Am I being unfair?
I think maybe you are, Chair. We do need a book on women in prison for a number of reasons, primarily because there hasn't been a book before about the women's experiences. There have been many books about the men's experiences. The men's experiences have been very well researched, and there have been very many publications on the men's experiences. When I first began to look at the women's experiences, I was surprised at how little was written about those experiences. And that's, in fact, what prompted me to undertake my PhD research. And then having completed the PhD, I was delighted to be able to publish the research in book form so that the women's story could be told, the story that is, you know, the women's experiences of prison in Ireland. I mean, it is an extraordinary story, a fascinating story, a very sad story. And it's a very big story. And it's extraordinary to me that it hadn't been published up to now. And I'm very glad that my book is published and so the story now is told. So that's the first part of your question. And then in relation to the numbers of women, you're right, there are very few women in prison in Ireland, comparatively speaking. I suppose on any day there probably are about 4,500 men, maybe a little more, and about, I would say, 150 women in prison. So that's... there's a huge difference there, 4,500 men, 150 women. So there are very small numbers of women in prison, and from those numbers, a sizable proportion would be foreign nationals. And then we would have a number of women who have committed serious offences and are serving long prison sentences. And for the most part, those women would only have committed one crime in their lives. It's likely that they only ever committed one crime. It was a very serious crime, and so they've been committed to prison to serve a long sentence. And then we would have a sizable proportion of women who were really very poor, maybe chronically addicted, indigent, homeless women, possibly living on the streets, coming and going constantly from the prison. And the prison population would probably be made up of those three groups, I would say.
I hate to be cranky, okay, but I have read, not just heard, but I have read that at least at some stage in the history of criminal justice in Ireland, judges have been reluctant to jail women.
Yes, I think that that's a theory that's often propounded, that there's a chivalry, if you like, a chivalry notion or a chivalry agenda at work among the judiciary, and this chivalry agenda stops them, if you like, from imprisoning women. And if you look at the theory and the theories of women and crime and women in prison, that theory of chivalry, you will see, has been debunked. And the small numbers of women in prison in Ireland and in other jurisdictions is a manifestation of the fact that women commit very little crime in society, that by and large women are a law-abiding lot. And that's why you have these small numbers of women in prison. And in fact, I would go so far as to say that actually maybe the contrary is true, that maybe judges are a little hard on women in the courts. And you will find that women would be sentenced to prison for crimes that men would not be sentenced to prison for.
For example?
A woman could be sentenced to prison for not having a ticket on a bus. A woman could be sentenced to prison for stealing two deodorants out of boots. If a woman presents in court in a pathetic enough state, the judge will often feel that he or she has no alternative but to send the woman to prison, because prison is the only institution that must take the woman, and the woman will receive some care while she's in prison. So prison becomes, if you like, a kind of a form of respite care for the woman from the point of view of the judiciary. So needless to say, then, this leads to numbers of women being needlessly criminalised and imprisoned, which is very sad.
Reading the history of reformatories and industrial schools, I have read that industrial schools held historically far more women than men. Could you give some historical or even current explanation retroactively for why so many women seemed to end up in industrial schools?
Well, if you look at the history of prisons in Ireland, the number of penal institutions that there were available, if you like, for the incarceration of women is much greater than the number of penal institutions that there were for men. Men were sent to prison and basically that was it. But women could be sent to a number of different institutions, among them convent, laundries, Magdalen asylums, industrial schools and so on. So we know that what is called the carceral archipelago for women was a much broader phenomenon than it was for men. So that's one issue. Then I suppose the second issue then is related to women's vulnerabilities, whereby women would not have had the same opportunities, if you like, to manage their own affairs, to fend for themselves, that men would have had. Very few employment opportunities, for example, very few freedoms. Women stayed within the home and were expected to stay within the home, and women married if they wanted to move out of the home, but that was really the only opportunity or the only route for them out of the home was into another home, into the marital home, if you like. So there were very few opportunities for women. And so as a consequence of that, then, women suffered greatly historically in terms of poverty. And the consequences of that then were that very large numbers of women throughout history in Ireland sought shelter, often in alcoholism. And public drunkenness is the reason why vast numbers of women historically were imprisoned in Ireland, and actually it's probably still the same. There probably are very large numbers of women imprisoned for public order offences, public drunkenness, public nuisance offences, and it's like that today as it was historically. So if you look at the numbers of women in prison and how they changed over the last 200 years, for example, in the 1850s you would have had more women in prison than men, and the reasons for that would be the reasons that I've talked about: lack of opportunity, lack of resources, poverty, and all that goes with that. And actually, during the famine years, when there were so many people imprisoned in Ireland, the prisons no longer kept track of the numbers of people imprisoned. It wasn't possible to keep track of the numbers. Women in prison outnumbered men in prison. Women outnumbered men in workhouses and in other kinds of institutions for the poor, rescue missions and so on. Okay, so then after the famine, then the numbers in prison generally began to decline, you know, as the worst effects of the famine began to be ameliorated. And the decline in the numbers of women in prison was more substantial than the decline in the numbers of men in prison. And that continued. The decline continued throughout the 20th century, year on year, right up until the 1980s. Now, for example, staff in the women's prisons, older staff, can remember a time in the 70s when there were maybe no more than 3 women in prison in the whole country at a time, and that trend or that pattern was evident elsewhere to the extent that academics and theorists working in the field thought in the 1970s that they could actually see an end to women's imprisonment. They thought that this was, you know, in the offing, you know, that there were so few women being imprisoned that they thought, well, this phenomenon is going to end. And then, of course, what happened was the rise in the use of illegal drugs and all the problems that came with that. And so in the 1980s, the numbers began to rise again, and they've continued to rise to the current position, you know, where, as I said, there probably are 150 women or thereabouts in prison on any day. 10 years ago, 1,000 women were imprisoned in a year, and now about 2,000 women are in prison in a year. So in 10 years, the numbers of women being imprisoned has doubled, and that's extraordinary. And actually, I don't think, Jared, that anybody can explain that. I don't think anybody really knows why that's happening.
Here are some concepts that might explain the rise in women's imprisonment. Number one, the rise in drugs, the rise in drug abuse. Number two, the rise in materialism. Society has become wealthier and there are more things that people can steal. Fewer things to steal in the past, fewer robberies. More things to steal in the present, more robberies. The family maybe was more joined, more cohesive, more under control of a father figure. Now we have more independent children, people are living home earlier, etc., etc. Does any of that grab you at all?
Yes, I think that there's probably some merit in what you've said, Jar. But I suppose the point that I would like to highlight is the fact that the numbers of women in prison over the past decade have doubled, and the numbers of men in prison have risen by one third. So the numbers of women in prison are rising more rapidly than the numbers of men. And that's something that I think would be worth exploring and you know, it would be worth our while trying to establish exactly why that is happening. Now, obviously, we live in a patriarchal society. I think there's no doubt about that. If you study women in prison and the women's experiences, it really, as my book clearly demonstrates, it really is a study of women's ways of being in the world and a study, if you like, of women's vulnerabilities in the world. And the women in prison in Ireland tend to be largely responsible for their homes and their families. And because of that, then, women in prison tend to bring their problems with them into prison. And so they have huge difficulties around prison and around dealing with their own lives. And that's in part a result of the patriarchal society, where the woman is, you know, left with all of these familial responsibilities, where the man is off doing whatever it is that the man wants to do, making his own way in the world and forging his own way and looking after himself and his own interests. And the woman is left then caring for the home, whatever the home is, caring for the children, if there are children, caring for aged parents, caring for aged relatives, worrying about the cat and the dog and everything else. So anything to do with the home then becomes a woman's responsibility, and the woman's very worried about that. So that is a feature of women's lives. And in relation to the women that we imprison, I think that there are very substantial issues around imprisonment of women because of their family situations. I think that that's a really important issue, a key issue, and I think that's something that we could spend a lot of time talking about, and it's something that I would be interested in talking about for a long time.
And I'm still talking to Christina Quinlan, author of
Inside: Women in Prison in Ireland, Past and Present.
Here's a cruel thing to say to you, here's an unkind thing to say to you. You speak of the pressures of women, the pressures they bring into the prison from the outside and from the inside out. But I could almost say to you, for God's sake, in a glib manner, I could say, but sure, these women, what problems could they have? The only problems they have is they're locked away. Some of them are drug addled. Are you capable, is one capable of having stress and worry when one is drug addled?
Oh, well, that's a big question, isn't it? When one is drug addled, well, I think that when people are high on drugs, I think that they're outside of themselves, really, and I think that that's a particular way of being. They're not responsible, they don't really know what's going on. So there's nobody in prison, or there's not supposed to be anybody in prison who's high on drugs. So they're all in some kind of a drug rehabilitation program or on a methadone program or whatever it is. So they're trying to deal with their drug addictions. But the women who are in prison have suffered all kinds of abuses. And they understand, I suppose, those kinds of abusive experiences to be a part of their lot in life. It is what they understand as their lot in life. And most of the abuses that are heaped upon them are heaped upon them by men. And most of those men are men that they are in relationships with, close relationships with, familial relationships or other relationships. And those are the kinds of experiences that the women have of the social world. And in a way, that's how they understand their place in the world, in a way.
And I suppose they, inverted commas, accept their lot because they come from very low down on the social ladder. Crazy thing, if they were middle class women, educated women, they would not have accepted, or they would not accept this lot, this abuse from men, or this whatever you want to call it. Am I making some sort of a point here about the socio-economic...
Class element.
Say that again,
class
please.
Class element, definitely, Jared. There is a class element. Now, I'm not sure that I'd go so far as to say that middle-class women don't accept any kind of abuse from men. I'm not sure that I would go as far as to say that. But certainly, for the kinds of women who end up in prison, they come from profoundly patriarchal societies. Often they come from households of two or three generations. And so, if you like, the social order in the household is a social order that most of us would have understood or would place in a historical context of about 50 years ago, maybe. You know, that they're, in a lot of cases, their experiences of the world and the homes and the households that they come from are quite dated by contemporary standards. And those are the kinds of environments that the women are socialised in. And those are the kind of communities that they are a part of. And this is how, if you like, they develop an understanding of who they are and their place in the world and what they can expect.
The old chestnut, education. I don't expect you to have facts and figures at the click of a finger, but could I say to you, most of the women jailed in Ireland have very low education levels.
Yes, that's true. Most prisoners in Ireland, I think, have very low educational levels. A lot of early school leaving among the prison population. Now, whenever you hear a general statistic like that about the prison population, the statistic is much more exacerbated or much more severe or much more pronounced in terms of the female prison population, simply because the female prison population is made up of the poorest, the most unfortunate women in Irish society, where the male prison population is drawn from a much broader spectrum of men in Irish society. The female prison population is drawn from a very specific group of women, the poorest, the most unfortunate, the least able, the least capable women in society. And generally speaking, they end up in prison because they're on the streets, because they're engaging in public drunkenness or some public order offence, and they're sent to prison so that the prison can deal with them and try and straighten them out. And that's the thinking around women's prisons, really, in Ireland. It's very sad. The female prison population is very sad. The female prison is a very sad place. It always surprises me, you know, when people get upset about suicides in prison, because when we have suicides in the community, prison is a much sadder place. It's I suppose nearly inevitable, you might say, that there would be suicides in prison because of that sadness.
And yet, God, I seem to have the counter argument for everything. And yet, I've read a short description of the Dóchas, and I don't want to politicise anything. I don't want to bring the government in, but reading briefly about the Dorcas Women's Prison. It sounds like a great place. I hate to say it, but it sounds like a great place.
The Dorcas Centre is a purpose-built women's prison. It's the women's prison within the Mountjoy Prison complex, and it was opened in 1999. So it's a purpose-built and it's modern. So from that point of view, I suppose it's miles ahead of a lot of the other prisons, like the men's prison in Mountjoy, for example, which is there since 1850, or Limerick Prison, you know, where, you know, it's the oldest operating prison in the country. It was opened in, I think, in 1820. We only have the two female prisons, the Dorcas Centre in Dublin, in Mountjoy, and the female prison in Limerick Prison. In relation to the Dorcas Centre being a lovely place or a great place, it's very far from that. It is a prison, but it is, because it's new and modern, and because it was built with, I suppose, some aspiration for a change in relation to imprisonment in Ireland, it is different to the other prisons. Okay, so the Dorcas Centre is different to other prisons. It's different to other prisons. As I say, it opened in 1999. It developed, if you like, from a vision for women's imprisonment of two female ministers for justice, Maura Geoghegan Quinn and Nora Owen, and John Lonergan, who was governor of Mountjoy Prison for such a long time. So the Dorcas Centre, Dorcas meaning hope, the Dorcas Centre is what I suppose we might call a campus-style prison. It's built around a garden, or with two gardens. There are two yards in the prison, a small yard and a big yard. The big yard has five houses, and in each of these five houses, which can accommodate, I think, between 20 and 40 women, each woman has her own room, and her room is ensuite. There are ensuite facilities in the room. And I suppose that makes the Dorcas Centre quite different. Now, I did one time ask somebody important in the Irish Prison Service, I forget who, what would it take to make that happen for the men, to give the men in prison something like the Dorcas Centre. And he said, well, you'd need all of the Phoenix Park, he said, anyway, to begin with, he said, you know. So, when you're dealing with 150 women, the scale is so different to dealing with 4,500 men. Okay, so that's the biggest difference. And the other really big difference is the way that women are in prison. Okay, so women in prison engage with the prison, engage with the staff, engage with each other, engage with the structures. Men in prison tend not to do that. Men in prison cut themselves off. They knuckle down and they do their time. They get on with it. Women in prison are not like that. Women in prison are interested in each other, trying to help each other, engaging with all of the developmental opportunities, trying to create a space for themselves, trying to create an identity for themselves that in some way is recuperative for them, that in some way helps them to recover from where they've been. And I suppose those are the two big differences. The numbers that we're dealing with, the small numbers of women versus the big numbers of men, and then the different ways that women have of being in the world. And those different ways are very evident in prison.
Who defines what a crime is? I'm guessing it's not the lower socioeconomic classes. It's not the prisoners. It's not the prisoners' friends. And maybe it shouldn't be. So who defines what a crime is?
That's a very interesting question, Ger. And I suppose, I feel that we all know the answer, really. The people who have power define what a crime is. And the people who have power confer criminality on particular kinds of behaviour in society. And, we've seen that, how easy it is to criminalise and then prosecute the kinds of crime that poor people engage in, how easy it is to prosecute somebody for stealing something, for breaking and entering, for engaging in an assault. It can be very easy to prosecute those kinds of crime. White-collar crime is virtually, it's almost impossible to criminalise. It's almost impossible to prosecute. It's so complex. Often the people who are attempting to bring forward a prosecution don't really understand the crime, and they can't really unravel the crime. It's just so complex. And those are all issues in relation to the criminal code, and those are all reasons why I think we have predominantly poor people in prison. That prison is there really for the punishment of the kinds of crime that poor people engage in.
And at the same time, the classic retort, I'd rather walk down a dark alleyway at 3 o'clock in the morning and be confronted by a white-collar criminal than a common criminal.
I think that prison is supposed to be the sanction of last resort in society, and certainly in Irish society it's supposed to be the sanction of last resort. And I think that if people are dangerous, if they pose a danger to other people, I think that prison is a good solution. It's a good way of dealing with that kind of a threat. But if people are not dangerous, why are they being imprisoned? What is the point of that? What is accomplished by it? It costs about €65,000 to keep each prisoner in prison. So why are we spending such vast amounts of money keeping unfortunate women in prison when all it is doing is damaging the women, damaging their homes, their home lives, their families, and seriously damaging their children? What is the point to that? I can't fathom the answer to it. I think that if people are dangerous and if people are engaging in violent crime, then maybe prison is the way to deal with that. But certainly for non-violent offenders, I just don't see the sense to imprisoning them.
I was speaking to Christina Quinlan, who is the author of Inside Ireland's Women's Prisons, Past and Present. Inside Ireland's Women's Prisons, Past and Present. And who's the publisher?
Irish Academic Press.
Thanks, Christina.
You're welcome, Ger.
Those who wish to follow me,
my ghetto gospel,
I welcome with my hands. And the red sun sings at last into the hills of gold. And peace to this young warrior without the sound of guns.
If I could recollect before my hood days, I sit and reminisce.